It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS.
The Big Stuff.
Mr. Big Stuff. Huh.
My nickname in high school.
Mr. Big Stuff.
Not Mr. Big Stuff. Mr. Who Do You Think You Are?
Now because you wear.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States. The original $189 window company. Online at windowworldst.louis.com. I am Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, and Ian Geis in the studio with me, and now news director Colin Jeffrey switches that off and turns on his alter ego, Showbiz Boy, for the Showbiz segment of the show. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing just fine. So there are four movies that are opening in St. Louis today. You have seen one, and I have seen one. And we'll get to the ones that we did not get to in a moment. But I think the one you went to see is going to be the big box office winner.
Yeah.
And that is Independence Day Resurgence.
Yes.
Which is a documentary about the Brexit, right?
Exactly. You got it. They were prescient. They forecast this a year ago and made a huge blockbuster about it. No, it's a sequel that does something that I like about sequels, and that it's 20 years after the original Independence Day. And in the movie, 20 years have passed since the events of the first Independence Day.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back yesterday before I saw the movie, and I watched the original Independence Day. I hadn't seen it in a while, but more importantly, I just wanted to see if there were any questions that I really wanted answers outside of what happened to Will Smith, because Will Smith is not in the second one.
Okay, well, it seems to me like that would be a major problem for the movie, that you don't have Will Smith in there. You don't have a blockbuster superstar movie guy who is going to be the attraction for this movie.
I think they got Vivica A. Fox back, though, right?
Yeah, and, you know,
that's surprising they found an opening.
Well, we
got
to, you know, the guy who plays Thor, Chris Hemsworth.
Uh-huh.
They got his brother, so he's in it.
Okay. How many Hemsworths are there?
And what's his name of Taxi fame? Judd Hirsch.
Judd Hirsch is back.
Okay. Robert Loggia is back, despite the fact he's been dead since December.
Yeah.
And he looks dead in the movie.
Does he?
Well, yeah. They may have filmed this scene with him at some point. I don't know, but he's in it. He doesn't speak, and he looks old and decrepit.
What about Bill Pullman? It's 20 years later in movie years.
Yes.
So he can't still be the president.
Oh, no, he's not. He's
the ex-president who's going to lead us to the great Independence Day.
Yeah.
Well, he's crazy now.
Oh, most of them do go crazy after they get out.
Okay. Well, especially he had a tumultuous.
He had a close encounter
run.
White
House blew up.
They never say, because the movie, the original Independence Day, begins when we're introduced to Bill Pullman's character, and he has approval ratings below 40%.
Mm-hmm.
And he admits, you know, I didn't evacuate the cities early enough. Millions of people died in America. I should have evacuated them earlier. But then he leads everyone to beat the aliens. Did he win re-election? They don't answer this.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he did. But he's now nuts.
What about the White House? Is there a new White House in this?
Oh, yeah. There's a fancy new White House.
Did they build it to look just like the old White House?
Pretty much, except they've now taken all this alien technology, because we blew up these ships and some crashed. We took this alien technology and merged it with our own. So they actually say this, like, it's 20 years later, and due to this alien technology, there's been no war. We've pulled together as a world, and
okay.
It's a science fiction movie.
Yeah, I know.
Emphasis on fiction. Yeah. Yes. And we're all better for it now, because we're ready. But at the same time, they realize aliens might be coming back, and so they've been constructing defenses
mm-hmm.
against these aliens using alien technology. Sound logic. Everything's fine.
Okay.
I actually like the setup of this movie, that it's 20 years later.
Let me just ask you one movie about the original, because I have not seen it since it first came out.
Okay.
It ended, as I recall, with Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum flying up to the alien mothercraft.
Yes.
If I can use a science fiction term.
Mothership? We're so close.
In one of their own alien craft.
That crashed at Roswell in 1941.
And they took it up there with a Mac computer and uploaded a virus into the mothership, and that's what blew up the aliens.
That's what took down the shields so they could blow up the aliens.
Oh, okay.
And then they used Morse code to rally the troops around the world to let them know they were going to take down the shields.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
So, all these little nuances you forgot.
Well, again, I haven't seen it since it first came out, but I do have to ask this. As a tech guy, as you know, I am the tech guy, my nickname in high school. That was because I was on the AV squad in charge of film strips. But
your sound's not synced up, Paul. Good job.
Stop saying boop. Old people know are laughing hysterically at the film strip joke. Like Dan. So here's my question. As the tech guy, have they upgraded their operating system?
Yes. Yes.
Because that Mac was 20 years ago, and you know now we have...
We've got alien technology. We've got like hover ships. There's all sorts of odd just allusions to the technology.
Does it take place in modern day, or is it still...
Well, no, I guess it's modern day, but...
A different modern day because of the
technology. Well, because we've got alien
tech... Right.
Shot way ahead because
do we have flying cars in the alien technology world?
It's a good. I didn't see many cars.
Alien technology if they don't have flying cars?
They have regular cars, but our helicopters don't need props. They're just like hover copters now, and the powerful people use them to get around.
Okay.
So we've got this alien technology. Everything's good, except this is where the movie gets a little convoluted. Bill Pullman and. So the president, the ex-president, and several other characters have these visions, and they keep scribbling this emblem. And clearly, as the audience, you're like, well, this is something to do with aliens, but you don't know. And it gets really convoluted as to why they can see this and goes into the history of some characters that, to be honest, you don't really care about. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, I don't care about the mythology. Bring on the aliens. Mm-hmm. Well, sure enough, the aliens show up. But what we didn't know is the aliens we defeated in the first ones, where, mind you, the size of the mothership was 53 kilometers. It was a good size ship.
Okay.
This ship that's approaching us now is 3,000 miles in diameter.
Now, you just screwed up with my... You just played with my mind there, because first you said kilometers, and then you switched to miles.
Yeah, well, they did that.
Dan, how many kilometers per mile, Dan?
I don't know. A couple.
A couple.
So, they broke away from the kilometers.
Right.
And went back to miles.
That's what Brexit was all about.
Yes.
Leave the kilometers behind, let's go to miles. Okay. Yeah. So 3,000 miles,
it's enormous.
That's the size of the ship.
And so it lands covering the Atlantic Ocean, spanning from Europe to the East Coast, and causes enormous devastation.
Without England.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So, and they actually make a joke about it. Jeff Goldblum makes a joke and says, they always love going after the landmarks. Like, he actually says it, because they're flying near Big Ben, and Big Ben gets blown up. Jeff Goldblum is still with the U.S. government, and he is actually, like, in charge of examining the alien tech. So he's more familiar with it. And it's at this point that humanity realizes we're in trouble. But the story doesn't actually center on Jeff Goldblum or the new president or the old president or any characters from the first one. It centers on the next generation, one of whom is Will Smith's son, one of whom is President Whitmore, Bill Pullman's daughter, who's now old enough, and the other one is Liam Hemsworth, who's just there to be a handsome guy.
Okay.
And so it centers on their story, how they're the next generation and have only grown up after an alien attack, and they're the ones who are going to have to lead us back.
Okay.
That's as much as I'm going to tell you, because it's got, you know, it's got, I guess, twists and turns in there, but it's not fun to talk about a plot of this because it's thin. That's not the point. The point is to go look at big explosions and technology and Liam Hemsworth.
Now, I do need to say about this movie that there was supposed to be a press screening of Independence Day Resurgence on Monday night.
Yes.
It was canceled at the last minute, and I asked somebody from the movie promotion company here in town, when have you rescheduled it for, and she told me there's not going to be a press screening.
Yes.
When they are that open about it, and the way she said it, I could tell from the tone in her voice, that tells you something about the quality of the movie, that the movie company essentially doesn't want to have critics go see this movie, because they know critics are going to hate the movie, and yet they want to open it up and have a big opening weekend.
Yes.
You paid to go see it last night.
Yes, I did.
Because it opened up on a Thursday night.
Yeah.
And what do you give it on a scale of 10?
Well, I have to say something before I rate it, because this is important. If you liked the original Independence Day, a large part of why you liked it is it was a 90s action movie. Mm-hmm. It was just big and dumb and special effects. And in 1996, those special effects were amazing.
Yes.
They were the best.
Yep.
The other thing that it relied on is the charm of three people: Jeff Goldblum, Randy Quaid, and Will Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them are gone from this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have anyone to replace him. And yeah. Jeff Goldblum can only carry it so much.
Yeah.
So you're likely going to go see a movie this weekend, and this is the movie you'll probably go see because it's the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
What I would recommend is go see it on the biggest screen possible, not because the graphics are anything great. They're good, but we've seen all this before. There's nothing jaw-dropping in it. It's just, huge explosions.
But this is the kind of event movie you want to see on a big screen.
Yes. And there are funny jokes. I saw it in a smaller theater because it was the only one playing nearby me. I didn't want to drive a million miles to get to a big screen. And there were jokes that I think would have gotten better laughs when there are a lot of people. Instead, when it's like 13 other people, yeah, no one's going to be that guy who's like, ha, 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 the big giant laugh.
Yeah.
And so it sort of fell flat. Go see it in a big screen with a bunch of other people around you, and I think you'll have a good time.
Okay.
It's critic proof, and so I don't feel bad saying, man, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10, but that's because,
wow,
I'm nostalgic for the first one.
Yeah.
If you've never seen the first one, holy smokes, don't waste your time.
Don't waste your time in the new one, you mean?
Yeah. Okay. Don't waste your time going to see
it. I was
going to
ask you, it's a whole new generation 20 years later,
yeah,
who may not have seen it. The teenagers of today never saw the first one. If they go and this is their only experience to Independence Day,
it's garbage.
Yeah, okay.
It'd be like if you never saw the original Jurassic Park and all you saw was Jurassic World, you'd be like, well, that was disappointing.
Yeah, what's the big deal about this?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's rough, but I mean, if you go just saying, hey, I'm going to watch some aliens and humans duke it out, sure, you'll have fun.
Box office prediction before you give it. I will point out, last weekend, there was a little movie that came out last weekend,
mm-hmm,
that I asked you to make a prediction about. Do you remember what your prediction was?
I said 127, I think, or 126.
For what movie?
Finding Dory.
Yes. You said it'll probably break the record for animated opening weekend, which,
yeah,
was 121 million.
Mm-hmm.
And you said probably 126, 127. What did it do in the end?
136.
136. It broke the record.
Whoa, Colin, very,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, showbiz boy strikes again.
It was a big weekend.
So what will Independence Day Resurgence do this weekend?
I think it's going to do north of $100 million.
Wow, really?
Yeah, just there's what other blockbusters are out right now?
Finding Dory.
But I mean, I'm talking like action block, like a summer movie.
Oh yeah.
So
okay.
What's that movie with Dwayne Johnson? What's
Central that? Intelligence.
Central
with Kevin
Intelligence.
Hart?
Yeah, that's a comedy though. That's a buddy comedy.
Okay.
It's just the comedies have a ceiling on them because they just, comedies don't have that huge draw.
Okay, Independence Day Resurgence, PG-13.
Yeah.
Teenagers.
Don't worry. I mean, there's a couple bad words. There's nothing super objectionable in this. It's,
okay,
you know, a lot of implied death.
All right. The next movie we're going to review is the one that I saw a couple of nights ago. And I'm going to tell you right now, do not take young children to see this movie. The movie is called The Shallows. 41 years after Steven Spielberg made Jaws, somebody else has finally made another good shark movie.
Okay.
This is a movie about Blake Lively, her character, Nancy, is on vacation in Mexico, and she has dropped out of medical school and is going surfing down in Mexico, and she is being taken to this really, 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 really secluded beach that she knows about because her mother had gone surfing there when she was first pregnant with young Nancy. And so she has wanted to go back there and has convinced some local to take her there and drop her off at the beach. And it's an empty beach. And she takes off her outer garments, and she's got the bikini underneath, and she puts a wetsuit on the top, and she waxes the surfboard, and she gets out there, and she sees that there are two other guys out there, two young Mexican guys. She knows some Spanish, but not enough to really have a conversation with them. But they warn her about, okay, there are rocks over here, especially when it gets to be low tide. You'll get to see them more, but right now you can surf and not worry about them. And there's fire coral. You want to not anybody who's gone scuba diving knows about fire coral. That stuff, once you just rubs against your skin, wow, it feels like it burns. That's why it's called fire coral. And so they tell her about a couple of those things, and the three of them then surf these pretty good-sized waves. And I don't know who the stunt surfer is who did the work for Blake Lively, but she's very, very good, and the cinematography makes it really look like Blake Lively is actually doing that. And then those two guys leave, and now she's alone in the water, not way out on the ocean. She can see the beach. She's a couple of hundred yards from the beach. And there's no one else around. Those guys are getting ready to leave. They're loading up their truck, and they're about to leave the beach when she gets attacked by a shark. A big shark, a great white shark. And that starts the story rolling. The real meat of the story starts then, because even if she could be heard by those guys a couple hundred yards on the beach, if you've ever been on the beach and you've been out in the water, you know you can shout back to people on the sand and they can't hear you because of the pounding of the surf and the whole atmosphere around them. And so she is really, really alone out there. It's her and the shark for the middle 45 minutes of this movie. And how is she going to get out of that water after being attacked by the shark, which bites her on the leg and she's bleeding? And how is she going to possibly get out of there? She gets up onto a rock at one point, but she knows that it's one of the rocks that they were talking about, that it's okay at low tide, but once high tide comes back and the water comes back over that rock, she's going to be exposed to this shark. Shark can't get her when she's on top of the rock, but when the rock is underwater, shark can get her again. There's a seagull who also was hurt that is also on the rock with her, which I thought at one point, and I'm glad they didn't do this, I thought they were going to turn into Wilson from Castaway,
right? Mm-hmm.
And have her having conversations, one-sided conversations. There's a tiny little bit of that, but not enough to make it obnoxious. It really is a survival story of this woman who is out there with this devastating, killing machine in the ocean. You do get to see some shots of what the shark looks like, particularly when it's attacking and particularly when it's going by. And there are at least a couple of scenes where every single person in the movie theater that I saw it in made this sound. Because something happens that frightens the crap out of you with that shark. There are tense moments where her leg is dangling off the rock just a little bit, and here comes the shark, and oh, she picked her leg up at just the right time. It sounds cliche, but it's really well done. And here is the difference between this and Jaws. Jaws came down to essentially Robert Shaw, Richard Dreyfuss, and Roy Scheider on a boat. We know they should have used a bigger boat, but it's the three of them on that boat out there hunting a shark way out in the ocean. They can't see land from where they are. And so when things go badly, they are way out there. In this case, you've got a woman who knows how to handle herself in the water. She's a good surfer. She's in shape. She's only 200 yards from the beach. It's not deep ocean water that she's in the midst of. And yet this unstoppable killing machine is swimming around and, you know, just wants to get her. And how she has to get herself out of that scenario is very, very well done. The cinematography is really beautiful. I enjoyed this movie a lot. I give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
But do not take young kids. There were some young kids at the screening that I saw the other night.
That's awful.
5-, 6-, 7-year-old kids.
Oh, man.
Why would never get in the ocean.
Well, not only will they never get in the ocean. Well, I'm going to get to that in a second. I guarantee you those kids didn't get to sleep that night or probably for the next few nights. The scenes in this with the shark are nightmare-inducing scenes. So don't take little kids. And if you're the kind of person who doesn't like to be scared, it's not a horror movie in any way. It's a very tension-filled movie of her trying to survive. if that's too much for you, don't go see this movie. But I think for everybody else, it's very, very good. Now, you mentioned not going in the water. After Jaws came out in the summer of 1975, and it really was the first blockbuster movie, the first movie that went over the top in terms of playing in theaters for months and months and months, the impact it had on beach communities. We don't have that all that much here in the St. Louis area, but on beach communities, you know, you go down to Destin, Florida, or Cancun, Mexico, or the coast of Carolina, or any of those places where the tourism is completely based on it being a beach community, they will tell you their businesses died because the movie scared people out of the water. Literally. They did not go on beach vacations that entire summer after Jaws came out. Now, The Shallows will not have that effect.
Good.
But here's the effect it's going to have. If you do ever take the family down to Destin or Panama City or somewhere else in Florida or down to Cancun or any other beach anywhere else, when you're walking off the beach into that water and you're about to take that first dive into the water, you're going to think about this movie.
Wow.
And you're going to be looking around in the water and making sure everything seems okay. And you're never going to want to do it alone like she did. But I liked it a lot. 8 out of 10 for The Shallows.
And I wanted to go back to Independence Day because I looked at something that I hadn't before to talk about the box office.
Yes.
I'm going to revise this hugely. This is bad.
Okay.
They barely made $4 million last night. Dory made $9 million.
In its first night.
In its first night.
Okay.
So let's cut my prediction in half. That's really bad. And the even sadder part is they've already announced Independence Day 3.
Really?
Yep. And when you get to the end of the movie, you're going to groan because you'll see it coming. But yeah, that's really bad. So this is going to be a big flop because it cost a lot of money to make and didn't have Will Smith. So I would now be amazed if it...
If they make Independence Day 3?
Well, no, I think they're too far into it probably already. Like, they'd have to pour a lot of money out of... They probably spent millions getting script and scouting locations and all that
stuff.
How
much do you think a movie like that costs to make? 30, 40, 50?
Independence Day?
Yeah.
$150
million to make that movie.
Yeah, I'd say that's a safe bet.
And what do you think it's going to open at now this weekend?
Maybe 50 to 60.
Mm, that's considered a flop in Hollywood.
Well, especially because they have to make about 500, or at that rate, what is it, 150? And they've got to make over $300 million before they start making money in Hollywood accounting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's bad.
That's not good.
But hey, number three. And, yeah. You know, why not? Let's milk it.
Two other quick things about The Shallows that I forgot to mention in my review. Number one, the length of this movie, perfect. 85 minutes.
Oh, wow. Oh.
You go to a 7 o'clock show, you're out by 8:30. It's really, really perfect. And the one thing about this movie that bugged me, I liked the movie, but one thing bugged me. As I mentioned, she's on a secluded beach. First, she's being driven through this secluded jungle that only really has a dirt road through it. And then she's dropped off on a beach where there essentially is no humanity. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of Mexican guys there who are surfing, and that's it. And yet, wherever she goes, on land, perfect cell phone service.
Hey!
You could be driving down Highway 40 and you can't keep a phone call going the entire distance of your ride home, and yet she's doing it with video, by the way. She's FaceTiming with her sister from this secluded beach in Mexico. Right!
There's a stoplight by our house, and if I'm stopped too close to it, I don't get cell phone service. I'm not kidding. It's a stoplight.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, can't get service here.
You should go to the secluded beach in Mexico.
Back up 6 feet.
No problem there whatsoever. Take a break, and we'll come back with more showbiz stuff here in a moment on the Big 550 KTRS. Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. Had the pleasure of seeing Joe Walsh do this song last Friday night out of Riverport. Great double bill. Opening act was not really an opening act. Paul Rogers and Simon Kirk and the rest of Bad Company. And by the way, Paul Rogers still has one of the top 10 voices in rock and roll history and sounded great. Which is why I was a little bit annoyed when on a couple of songs he would turn the microphone around and tell the audience, you sing this part, you sing this chorus. To which my attitude is, I paid good money to have you sing it.
Maybe that's how his voice has stayed good all these years.
Yeah.
You got to conserve it.
Okay, but I don't want to hear 10,000 amateurs singing your song. I paid to see you sing Shooting Star or Can't Get Enough or whatever it was. And then Walsh closed the show, and he was really, really good. Did stuff from the James Gang, did stuff from his solo career, Life's Been Good, and other things. And, of course, did a couple of Eagles songs, including Life in the Fast Lane. And as a tribute to the late Glenn Frey, he and his backup singers did Take It to the Limit. And it was really, really beautiful. The Eagles, by the way, have been named one of this year's Kennedy Center honorees, along with Al Pacino, James Taylor, Mavis Staples, and pianist Martha Argerich. There's always somebody from the world of classical music or ballet or opera who's that fifth person who nobody's ever heard of except people in that world, and that's who that is. The Eagles actually were set to be recognized last year at the Kennedy Center, but they had to back off because Glenn Frey was sick. And, of course, since then he's died, and so when they do the ceremony on December 4th, which will air on CBS on December 27th, it'll essentially be a bittersweet reunion of the band and memorial to Glenn Frey. Speaking of TV stuff, there is a show that debuts Sunday night on Showtime that, Colin, I know you're looking forward to because you have told me that one of your favorite movies is Cameron Crowe's Almost Famous.
Yes.
He has a new series called Roadies, which he is co-writing, co-directing, co-producing with Winnie Holtzman, who 30 years ago gave Claire Danes her big start in a TV show called My So-Called Life, and since then is also the co-author of a little Broadway show you might have heard of called Wicked.
Oh.
Which is only played to a gazillion people. It comes to the Fox, it looks like every 6 weeks they're playing Wicked down at the Fox. So Winnie Holtzman, pretty successful. Unfortunately, Cameron Crowe hasn't done anything since Almost Famous, which was, what, 10, 15 years ago?
Oh, yeah, at least. Yeah. 2001, yeah.
Something like that. So this this TV show, Roadies, has Luke Wilson and Carla Gugino, who at one point was going to be my future ex-bride, after she did a TV series called Karen Sisko, which was based on the George Clooney J-Lo movie Out of Sight.
Okay.
Which was really, really good. J-Lo played played Karen Sisko, an Elmore Leonard character, in that. And then they made a TV series about it, which only lasted 7 episodes on ABC, but I loved it and I fell in love with her. So Luke Wilson and Carla Gugino star in this as the kind of the tour manager and the production manager of a group of roadies who are working for this group called the Staten House Band as they go from city to city. And Ron White from the
Blue Collar Comedy
Tour, he's in there as one of the head roadies as well. And I got to see 3 episodes of this. They sent me a link to press screening of 3 episodes of this. And holy cow, I really, really, really wanted to like it. Because I like all of those people I just mentioned. Here's the problem. The life of a roadie is not that exciting. It's just not. You just go from place to place and
put
up the riggings and break things down afterwards, and you deal with the band and the egos, and you tune the guitars, and you set things up for the lights and the sound, the woman who does the sound, and all that sort of stuff. And so they're creating conflict where there isn't any. Now, workplace dramas and comedies can be very successful. I don't think this one's going to be. The conflict in the first few episodes is who's going to get fired. And there's a British character who's brought in who is supposed to be the antagonist. But pretty quickly you realize they don't care about this guy, so we don't care about this guy. And nothing that goes on with any of the other people, those I mentioned, or the other actors in this, really, really matter all that much. The only thing that makes it worthwhile is this band, the Staten House Band, for some reason they can't keep an opening act. That's part of the design of this, so that they can, so that Cameron Crowe can call up his music buddies and have them in there. And so there's a group called The Head and the Heart. They're featured in the first one. There's another one called Rain Wolf. They're featured in the second one. Lindsey Buckingham from Fleetwood Mac is featured in the third one. And by the way, not a bad job of acting by Lindsey Buckingham when he's offstage interacting with these people. All of that is interesting, and the performances are pretty good. You don't really get to see the Staten House Band because it's not about them. It's about the people behind the scenes. And as I say, not worth your time.
No, that's a shame.
It's going to debut on Sunday night on Showtime. And you know what it reminds me of? The HBO series Vinyl,
Hey.
That debuted last year. And I heard this week HBO, which had promised a second season for that show even before the first season aired.
Yes.
They decided this week, not so much.
Yep. Do you want to know why?
Yes, I do.
I can tell you why.
Okay.
So Marty Scorsese was involved in this. HBO bet big on it.
Mick Jagger?
Yeah. Oh, huge.
The two of them worked on it for 10 years.
And a huge cast.
And Terrence Winter, who did Boardwalk Empire.
Mm-hmm. $100 million budget for the first season. It cost him $100 million. Mm-hmm. I believe the first episode, I want to say if I remember correctly, it cost north of $50 million, close to $60 million for one episode.
It was a two-hour episode, yeah. And it was an hour and 45 minutes too long.
Yes. So it cost that much. It peaked at viewers with its premiere. It's 765,000 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then went down. The first week, it lost 13%. Then off that number, it lost another 20%.
Mm-hmm.
It rebounded in the second half when, like Frank loves it, when they talked to their friends and got a few of their friends to watch it. But it never hit that premiere number. Mm-hmm. So all told, it did about 6.5 million viewers for $100 million.
Cumulative.
Game of Thrones this season costs about $100 million mm-hmm. to make. It's their most expensive season yet.
Mm-hmm.
For their last episode here, episode 9 out of 10 this season, they got 23 million viewers.
That's a little bit more than Vinyl ever got.
So that is why HBO made the wise decision to say Vinyl, fun but no fun. And this is going to be one of these shows that you have this one friend who's like, oh, I can't believe you never watched it. It was so great.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't.
I did watch it. I watched that first two-hour episode, and I said, all right, I'm going to give it one more. And halfway through the second episode, I said, I can't take this anymore.
Yeah.
Again, I like the people involved, but did
not
care about it.
It's not a reflection on them. It's just not a good show.
But how about HBO learning a lesson here? You know, 4 years ago, they put on a series called Luck. You remember this?
Yes.
It was from David Milch and Michael Mann, and it starred Dustin Hoffman and Dennis Farina and Nick Nolte. It was about the world of horse racing.
Yeah.
And before it went on the air, HBO committed to a second season and then didn't even make it through the first season before they yanked it off the air.
Yeah.
It was not a good TV show. And then last year, they had another show called The Brink, which was a so-called comedy. Afghanistan War or Iraq War or something like that. Yeah, Tim Robbins and Jack Black. Again, they committed to a second season of that show before The Brink even debuted. Now, here's the thing. That means that people at HBO are seeing the show and loving it, right?
Yes.
Because before they show it to us, they all have seen it.
So they were burned a long time ago by this. There was a show called Rome on HBO, and if you haven't seen this, watch it. There's two seasons of it. It's very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Rome was very expensive to make and had a long lead time because it's almost a decade old, and it took a long time. Season one, they weren't certain what they wanted to do with it. It started to pick up steam. So the creators of Rome said, if you want to do season two and three, we need the answer now, because if you don't approve both, it will be off the air for a full year before we have season three ready.
Mm-hmm.
And HBO said, no, just do season two and end it. It turned out to be their biggest show that year. It was an enormous success for season two, but they couldn't make season three because they would have lost all their momentum. So I think they're still burned a bit by that, and they want to make certain they don't lose anything. And they're looking for something big. Game of Thrones has, if you believe the rumors, this last episode this season and 13 episodes over two half seasons.
Well, when is the season finale? It's this Sunday, isn't it?
This Sunday. So we'll see. You could essentially see Game of Thrones over the course of two episodes put up 40 million viewers compared to 6.5 million
over
Vinyl.
Over the entire run, cumulative of Vinyl.
Yeah. So,
here's my point. Somebody in that HBO office that watches these shows before we get to see them mm-hmm. should be able to say, you know what? This didn't really work. Let's not commit to a second season.
Or just show it to one friend. And they'll be like, it's not good. Like, you've got to have that friend who's honest with you.
Show it to
like,
somebody who doesn't work for HBO.
This is garbage. Like, what are you doing? Stop now.
I will volunteer, by the way, to be that friend. Show it to me and I'll tell you. Because I could have told you halfway through episode one of Vinyl, don't commit to a second season of this.
Yeah, so Frank's going to be sad on Monday, I think. He loved this show.
Yeah. Sunday night on ABC, they're starting their fun and games block.
Yeah.
Hour-long episodes of Celebrity Family Feuds, hosted by Steve Harvey. Then an hour of the $100,000 Pyramid, hosted by Michael Strahan. that legendary game show host, Michael Strahan.
Yeah, no kidding. That's weird.
And then another legendary game show host, Alec Baldwin, hosts The Match Game.
That's going to be awful.
Complete with 70s music. I've seen the promo for it. They use the womp, 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 womp.
Horrible.
Music from there, and well,
my
we'll see.
My question is he going to have that long microphone?
He does have the long microphone.
The Gene Rayburn use?
Yes, and the carrot, because I've seen the promo, I can tell you the contestants are on that round table that comes around and reveals them, and the six stars are there.
Contestant
anybody of note on the panel?
I didn't see who was on the panel. They didn't really take good shots of them.
A homemaker Charles from Nelson North Dakota. There.
Sorry?
Charles Nelson Reilly going to be
no,
there?
No, Charles Nelson Reilly's dead.
Oh, they could still bring him back.
Check that.
He's dead.
He's dead, okay.
But I'm looking forward to Tell the Truth when that comes back. They're rebooting that.
Yeah.
It's already on the air.
Oh, it is. How have I missed it?
It's not on in St. Louis. It's a syndicated show that doesn't air here.
This is the new one, right? The one they just started?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, never mind.
Now, here's the thing about Match Game. When we're talking about it with nostalgia in our voices, Match Game PM and all the rest of that, was on in the 1970s.
Yeah, Match Game 74.
Yes.
Yeah.
You've got two generations of me. Ian was not alive when the great episodes of Match Game
aired. But we watched them all.
Maybe you've seen them because of GSN.
Yes.
Yeah. So I wonder if there will really be nostalgic viewing by a new generation. I mean, how's this going to do 18 to 34 on Sunday night?
I don't know,
but they're running those 3 hours all together. And we mentioned that there were four movies opening this weekend, and we only reviewed two. You gave Independence Day Resurgence 4 out of 10, and I gave The Shallows 8 out of 10. The other movies are Free State of Jones and The Neon Demon. I've only got 1 minute. Can you summarize them?
Free State of Jones is based on the true story of Newton Knight, a man in the South in the Civil War era that led essentially revolution against the South from the South. And The Neon Demon is by Nicholas Winding Refn. I never get to say that name, so it's fun to say. It's a teenage girl heads to L.A., and this group of older women try to suck the youth out of her. Mm. It's a horror movie. He does creepy, weird, surreal movies. But if you like his stuff, Drive, Bronson, you'll like this.
Oh, he made Drive?
Bronson.
Ooh, that's a Ryan Gosling movie I absolutely hated.
Ugh.
All right, that's our showbiz stuff for this week here on the Big 550 KTRS.